Hello, good morning and welcome to the Sunday Supplement. On the agenda today, Chelsea's reputation. It's on the line after Jose Mourinho's meltdown during the 2-1 defeat against West Ham. Arsene Wenger calls it the perfect week after Arsenal beat Bayern Munich in the Champions League. They've gone top of the Premier League after beating Everton. And will Wayne Rooney celebrate his 30th birthday with some of the old magic in today's Manchester derby? Here to discuss all that and much more, Steve Bates. He's the chief football writer at The People. Andy Dunn is the chief sports columnist at The Sunday Mirror. And John Richardson is the chief football writer at the Sunday Express. Morning to you guys. Good to see you as ever. Don't forget, you can tweet the show at SundaySup and the best of them will appear on the screen during the next hour and a half. OK, let's have a look at the papers this morning. It's dominated by one man. He's hogging the headlines yet again. And it's the Mourinho meltdown, according to The Observer this morning. Yesterday, Nemanja Matic sent off in the first half at Upton Park. Silvio Lauro, the assistant manager at Chelsea, sent off. Mourinho watched the game from the director's box in the second half. He's on the brink, according to Rob Draper in the Mail on Sunday. He was at the game for them. Sam Wallace says that Mourinho is in meltdown at Chelsea. The look of champions, that's the rugby. Remember we used to say that about Chelsea. That was last season. Well, that was then. What about now? Where now for Jose Mourinho? More of the shame is the headline on the back page of The Sun this morning. That Manchester derby, Manuel Pellegrini, same old tit for tat. We're bigger than Man U, he says. We're coming on to them in part five of the programme. The Sunday Mirror, Wenger for life. He's going to sign a new contract, according to Steve Stammers. They beat Everton yesterday. He's staying until 2019. That's Steve Stammers' take on events at Arsenal at the moment. The Sunday People, the defeat against Swansea yesterday leaves Tim Sherwood on the brink, says Neil Moxley. And Steve, who's a guest this morning, comeback Pat, Patrick Vieira, their dominant midfield enforcer from the mid-90s. He is returning to Arsenal to shadow Wenger and one day eventually succeed him as the manager. We'll talk about that in part two today. Taxi for Tim on his way out of Villa Park, according to The Star this morning. Vardy grabs a pizza history. Great for him yesterday. Another goal for Jamie Vardy. He had a slice of pizza yesterday. Claudio Ranieri promising his players they could tuck in after the game they beat Crystal Palace. And the top guns, Giroud yesterday starts in front of Theo Walcott at the Emirates. He scores from Mesut Ozil's magnificent lofted chip. Puts Arsenal in front. They went on to win against Everton 2-1. We would have started with them, but that was before Jose Mourinho hogged the headlines. He's dominating again, Stephen. You were at Upton Park yesterday.
I was, yeah.
For events. Talk us through them, the behaviour of Chelsea's management team, their players, the Matic sent off, and their reputation in the game after this series of events, which will ultimately end in various charges from the FA and possibly even the Premier League.
It will, and you know, even by Chelsea's standards this season, it was a spectacular meltdown. Not just by Mourinho, you know, his players lost their heads as well. His staff sort of lost their cool. And it was just one of those days where everything that could have gone wrong for Chelsea did go wrong. And it was kind of encapsulated the whole season yesterday in just a few minutes of madness before half-time. And, of course, after the game, Mourinho failed to show for the post-match presser, for which, obviously, Chelsea and him will be up on a charge, I would imagine, because it's mandatory for managers to come and speak after the game, or certainly one of the staff. We don't really know his thoughts at the moment, but so there are probably more questions than answers from yesterday, even though, you know, what we saw on the pitch only confirmed what we already really know, that Chelsea are just not the same side as they were last season. And you know, I think a lot of people were very surprised when Manchester United went from first to seventh in the first season that Alex Ferguson wasn't there. But Chelsea's demise this season is even more catastrophic. The way Mourinho's behaving, you have to worry what the long-term future for him is, because let's face it, he's never been in a position like this before, certainly not in English football, where his team are no longer a dominant force. And for all the world yesterday, Chelsea just looked, apart from odd flashes, looked really, really ordinary, very vulnerable. And I think that's all coming from the manager. We hear, obviously, that things behind the scenes are not good. Obviously, we've had the Eva Canaro situation this season. And from then on, it's just spiralled out of control. And you really do fear now what the long-term future does hold for Jose.
You're at the game, Steve. Did you sense things were happening during that game? Did it feel as though it was boiling up?
I didn't sense things, but West Ham clearly did. And that's the problem, I think, for Chelsea now. Because West Ham clearly felt yesterday, having already beaten, obviously, Manchester City, Liverpool, Arsenal, Crystal Palace, having had some good results against big teams this season, West Ham clearly felt that Chelsea were there for the taking. And that is a really, really difficult sort of situation and a strange situation for Chelsea and Mourinho to find himself in when the opposition believe you're there for the taking. Mourinho's never had to face that anywhere he's been. And it's clearly looking as though he doesn't know how to handle the situation. And, you know, I'm absolutely certain, sort of, from my sort of knowledge of dealing with other managers in the past, that Sir Alex Ferguson, for instance, would have gone to that press conference after the game. He would have had an agenda, and he would have made his point.
He didn't go for about 7 years, but never mind.
But you know, in that situation where you know he feels as though he's got something to explain, Mourinho apparently was just sat on the bus 25 minutes after the game, waiting for the team to board.
Yeah, criticism going on. Andy, will these constant outbursts, challenges to authority, will they be affecting Chelsea's reputation worldwide? They worked so hard to build it in the build-up to, perhaps we'll go back to Champions League success in 2012, Europa League the following season.
Yes.
Will this affect their reputation around the world?
Well, yes, it certainly affect their reputation here. Around the world, I'm not so sure. I think that's probably more dependent on your results and your performances and your performances of your big players. And whether you're winning and winning in Europe, I think that's probably the issue, if it'll affect you around the world reputationally. It will affect you here, and their reputation is poor at the moment. And it's not just the fact that the reputation with the wider public, it's also what will it do for the reputation with the authorities. You know, and it's clear now that the authorities are in a situation where, you know, they've got to be independent, they've got to be fair, they've got to be unbiased, they've got to be objective. But you almost feel that their patience is wearing thin with Chelsea and with Jose Mourinho. You know, you almost feel that's the case. Certainly, you know, the £50,000 fine and the one-game stadium ban suspended, I thought was draconian for what he said. But then for him then to pursue this and keep repeating weak and naive, well, actually, that's just immature, you know, and that doesn't do your reputation or your club's reputation any good at all. So I think they've got an issue there, and that's something that will, you know, be on the owner's mind and the chairman's mind, I'm sure. I think strip away that, though, Ash, and I think Steve's alluded to it. Strip away all the stuff that's going on away from the field, and there's plenty of it, and think why, how come Mourinho's biggest, you know, mistake, Mourinho, the biggest mystery is how he's allowed this team to be, to be this beatable, to be this ordinary, to be this, you know, ill-disciplined, you know, and to look a little bit frazzled. You know, they look frazzled. It was a very interesting Fabio Capello, actually, you know, for everything he said while he was England manager, I don't think he said anything as insightful as he did the other week when he said, he suggested that Mourinho's players have an 18-month burnout, you know, point. Yeah. And I look at that team and I think he might well have a point. You know, is Matic burnt out? The demands that Mourinho puts on his players, mentally and physically, are immense. Oscar, you know, I think he was only on the bench yesterday, wasn't he, Oscar? Yeah. But Willian, Hazard, I think you alluded to it earlier in the week in a piece that you wrote for the Daily Mail. And I do think it looks as though he's got a team there who have reached the sort of point where he, not a spent force, not at all, but where they're buckling under demands placed on him. And then he must look at that and think, why did they need freshening up in the summer? You know, and they didn't, essentially. They didn't really freshen up that much in the summer. And maybe that's something they regret now.
John, will the players in that dressing room, that Chelsea dressing room, be bored of the antics? It's game after game, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the easiest thing in the world for me would be for Jose Mourinho to walk away from this. You know, take a big pay off or whatever. This is unknown territory for Jose, isn't it? He's not been in this situation before because, let's be fair, he's a great manager, great coach. He's won numerous things in different countries. He's been fantastic. But he's never had to rebuild a team. Everywhere he's been, it's been a quick fix or whatever. They've won things. He's moved on to another club. Now at Chelsea, you know, they're in crisis. They're in crisis. And it's whether he can handle it or not. And I'd love him to stay to see whether he can do this. But in answer to your question, I think some of the players are cheesed off. The way he's treated some players is, I don't know, he's never done this before. You know, he's hung a few players out to dry. I mean, you wonder whether Matic, you know, got sent off. Did he get sent off because You know, he was badly treated, wasn't he, in a game where he was a substitute and he was subbed. Was he trying to
prove... Southampton defeat. Yeah.
Was he trying to prove something? Was he overreacting? We don't know the situation with John Terry. I mean, John Terry's a fantastic, loyal servant. Is John Terry a little bit cheesed off? I think the goalkeeping situation is interesting as well. I mean, I think Petr Cech should still be at Chelsea. I think he's a tremendous goalkeeper. I don't think that's right as well. There's no solidity there. You know, the defence hasn't got... I mean, Theo Courtois is a very good keeper, but I still think Petr Cech's probably a better keeper. I think there's been some strange decisions made, but I want him to stay. I want him to see how he reacts. But I'm afraid the way, and the boys, I agree with them, it is meltdown, and you fear that this could be all over in a few weeks' time.
Steve, the defeat yesterday, there's a statement after the defeat at home to Southampton on the Monday, reassuring Mourinho that he was the long-term future of the club, but results had to improve. They weren't good enough. Everyone could see that. They've now lost five in the Premier League. What were the club saying last night?
Well, the message from them was that that statement holds, and it will be a longer-term support, not a short-term support. But as you've just said, a key element of that last statement after the Southampton game was that results have to improve. Now, since that Southampton defeat, there have been three games. They've won one, they've lost one, they've drawn one. Is that an improvement? I'm not sure it is. They've got a big test again, sort of at the end of the coming week, against Liverpool, which will be all eyes will be on them again. So it's how he responds. I mean, you know, they clearly, he's clearly there's a siege mentality about Chelsea at the moment. But some teams thrive on that. Chelsea aren't thriving on that at all. You know, I have to say, yesterday there were a couple of moments of fate that turned against Chelsea. I mean, have we ever seen a closer goal line decision than that one? 9/10 of the ball over the line, but wasn't a goal. If that had gone in, might have changed the game completely. Fabregas, a marginal decision, which we still don't know whether it was on or off. He scores the goal, it's an equaliser, and they're back in the game. But too many of Chelsea's players aren't performing. Costa had two good, really good chances before, the score was 0-0. He missed them. Didn't look a player. Hazard, the same. There are too many players underperforming. Fabregas, God, where's he gone? Where's that player from last season?
He took him off half-time, didn't he?
Yeah, he took him off, and he said it wasn't injury, it was tactical.
I know, which is a strange decision. You know, for one of your, you know, you've seen your key players. He was certainly a key player last year, and what's happened to him this season. But you know, even despite all, I agree that some of those decisions, you know, all those borderline decisions seem to be going against Chelsea. The goal one is amazing. That, you know, I was thinking to myself, how do we actually know that's right?
Yeah.
but everyone says, "Oh, well, it must be it's technology," but that looks so close. But it still doesn't excuse the fact that your coach has been ill-disciplined enough to get himself sent off at half-time. Mm-hmm. You know, to get himself sent to the stands, where inevitably then he becomes a figure of ridicule. You know, I think there was someone taking videos of him. You know, I really think, you know, no wonder he gets really annoyed about that. You know, followed in the street by kids with camera phones. Now he gets sent to the stand.
So you sympathise him over that alleged incident in the London
street? Yes, I do.
You do?
I do, yeah. I don't think, you know, listen, we know that anyone in the public eye, and now with social media, now with access to your video cameras, your chances of any privacy are... zero, basically, you know, slim and none. But I do sympathise with him for that, you know, and I sympathise with him also for yesterday when he goes in there and people are taking videos of him. And I know they're going to do that, but that still makes me think, well, you know, I've got a little bit of sympathy for you, but what I haven't got sympathy for is him getting himself into a position where that happens to him. At half-time, he's got to be... Those decisions weren't so dramatically wrong... Mm. They were borderline. They might have been wrong, but if so, you know, it was wafer thin, sort of margin for error. So that's not enough for him to go in and be so, I assume, remonstrative that he gets himself sent to the stand with his assistants.
His focus should have been on the team because at that point they were only 1-0 down.
Yeah, but he thinks the whole world's against him, doesn't he?
Yeah,
it is this siege mentality.
Yeah,
but as you say, Anne, it's not working.
I'm not sure that's a great game plan though for the team at the moment.
It's worked for some clubs though, isn't it?
It has, but I don't think it's working for Chelsea. And as Andy says, you know, confronting the referee was only going to lead to one thing, up in the stands.
Yeah.
You just can't do that.
Yeah, bad news for Chelsea. That's enough for them for now. I'm sure we'll be back onto them next week, I would think. Probably starting the show with them, as usual. There was another team on that field at Upton Park yesterday. It was West Ham. Zarate scored a cracker. Andy Carroll, great goal for him. His first in the Premier League since January, wasn't it? Were you impressed with the way that they played? It's the last time they played Chelsea at Upton Park, or so much was made of that before the game. But this is a big win for them. Another big win for Slaven Bilic.
It was a great win. And I was saying to some of the boys before we left last night, it's a real shame that every Chelsea defeat at the moment is the story, not the team that's beaten them. And it was a real shame yesterday because West Ham, probably this morning in this morning's papers, we might be guilty of this, have maybe not fully focused on exactly what West Ham did yesterday. And right from the start, they sensed a vulnerability about Chelsea. Their football was fantastic. Payet, Zarate, Lanzini, attacking players with a desire to entertain. And it was fantastic. And you know, I also thought Collins and Tompkins at the back did a fabulous job as well of nullifying any threat that Chelsea had. But the football yesterday was quick, it was incisive. I mean, if you'd been beamed down from space, you'd have said they were the champions last season, not Chelsea, because things are really going well there. And the place was, Upton Park was just jumping. It really was. The fans were absolutely loving it. Obviously, it's what we're seeing Mourinho, who's not well liked down there, and one of their big rivals. You know, they were on their knees and West Ham fans were loving it.
Yeah, they were loving it. Some of the players that Steve just picked out, Payet's one of the finds, but Andy Carroll yesterday as well. Not one of the finals. He's just come back from a long injury, another long injury.
But making an impact when he comes back on and comes on a sub. And it's interesting that he's coming back into a team that's doing well, which is really important. And playing, you know, a type of football that you might think, you know, you might pigeonhole Andy Carroll and say it doesn't suit him. But what does suit him is the goal like yesterday. I think he had a knockdown for a goal last week, didn't he? Yeah. Now, so what a great thing to do, to have, when you're winning and when you're doing well. Also, then you've got this option now to change the way you play within a game, bringing Andy Carroll on. And we all know he's a good finisher. We all know he's good in the air. You know, he might not be the quickest player. He might not fit in with the, as Brendan Rodgers famously thought, with a sort of, you know, quick, sure passing type of game. But he's a great asset to have if he can stay fit, you know. And also the incentive for him to stay fit is that, you know, that there are striking places up for grabs with England, with Euro 2016 just around the corner.
Yeah, Roy Hodgson was there yesterday at Upton Park to watch that goal. John, can they make the Champions League? Not Chelsea, West Ham. Third in the table, they've got 20 points. They've scored more goals than anyone else in the Premier League so far.
They're going for it, and it'd be fantastic for football if they could. If somebody outside the so-called top four, you know, the elite top four could get there. I mean, they're playing fantastic football. Been on this programme before saying that I thought Slaven Bilic wasn't the best appointment, but he's proved me wrong, he's proved a lot of people wrong. They're fantastic to watch, as Steve said. I'll tell you what they've done. They've bought well in the summer. You know, you look at other clubs and the recruitment, and it's been poor. West Ham's has been top class. They've picked out some really good players. Payet, probably the best of them. What was he, less than £10 million pounds from Marseille? You know, they're fantastic to watch. Now, the aim for West Ham was to stay in the Premier League, wasn't it, and go into the Olympic Stadium. Well, they're certainly going to do that. Can they bring Champions League football? You probably say no, but I wish they could.
You've got to dream, though, haven't you? That's the thing. That's got to be the ambition of the club. OK, one team who's not in dreamland, that's Arsenal. It's for real. The top of the Premier League. Arsene Wenger said it was the perfect week for them after they beat Bayern Munich. And yesterday, they beat Everton at the Emirates. Morning next. What a week it has been for Arsenal. They beat Watford last weekend, Bayern Munich in the week in the Champions League, and yesterday, Andy, they beat Everton at the Emirates to go top of the Premier League. Now, we don't know how long it'll be for because of the Manchester derby today, but they're there. Wenger called it a perfect week. Can they stay there now?
Well, they can stay there, but we've been here before. Mind you, we haven't been here before when they've been top of the league after this time. I think it's
the first time since February 2014 that they've been top.
21 since they've been top. It's tight there. The only thing I would say, you would be a fool to predict whether Arsenal will stay at the top of the league for the rest of the season or indeed go on to win the title. But what you can say is they have shown a resilience to bounce back from setbacks. The Olympiacos result, you know, first game of the season as well, the West Ham game, they bounced back from those setbacks and they bounced back with a lot of resilience. You know, you can see they've got a bit of belief about them. The good results, that Watford result now, bearing in mind Watford went to Stoke and won 2-0 yesterday, that result maybe looks a little bit better now than it did at the time, maybe. Obviously, Bayern Munich, we know what they're doing in the Bundesliga and in Europe. And, of course, yesterday against Everton was the type of, you know, with Barkley scoring, getting that one back, Everton pressed and pressed. And you thought, you know, Arsenal did well, really showed that sort of resilience that that we maybe there hasn't been there in the past. I wouldn't at the moment, you know, go overboard about them. They're still playing some good stuff. What I would say is that it's important that they've got their best players more influential for more times in more games. And I'm speaking about Ozil, about Cazorla, about Sanchez. You know, someone like Ozil now is having a real, real impact on more games than he's not. Previously, he's had an impact on less games than more. So, you know, he was a 1-in-4 game, man.
Peripheral.
Yes, he was a 1-in-4. You know, if things were going right for him, if the game was going right, if he wasn't getting closed down too quickly, he could run a game. And as I say, but that was 1-in-4. He's now 2-in-4, 3-in-4 maybe. He's influential. The best provider in terms of other players assists in the Premier League at the moment, a beautiful footballer who appears to be now just... You know, maybe it's taken this long to adjust to the demands, the physical demands of the Premier League. So he's hugely influential. Sanchez playing well. So going forward, you now understand, whereas you raised an eyebrow, you now understand why Wenger didn't feel the need to add any forward-thinking offensive outfield players to his squad in the summer. He actually didn't add any outfield players, but you now understand maybe he knew that the sort of axis of Sanchez, Cazorla, Ozil would take time, and now's the time to flourish. What I would say, it will be exciting to see if they can, because, as we all know, when those type of players are playing well, it's lovely to watch.
Mm, and they've got injuries at the moment as well. Jack Wilshere is on goals on Sunday. A little bit later, as out had Aaron Ramsey with his hamstring injury as well. Just on Ozil, is he the best player in the Premier League on current form? Wenger said yesterday after the game, if you don't like Ozil, you don't like football. And he's also said, I'd prefer not to speak about him. I'd prefer to watch this game all over again. So that he could draw, and that was his manager talking.
He's a top-class player. He's got this laconic style, though, hasn't he? So when he hasn't got the ball, you think he's not doing anything. But he has influence on games. He's got a brain. He's a good passer of the ball. And he can also score goals. I mean, he's a top-class player. But I'm going to go back to Petr Cech, because you know, I mentioned him earlier, and I think he is very important. You know, we're talking about Arsenal. Can they win the championship?
Great save from him at the end yesterday.
Absolutely. He makes save after save. He's very steady. You know, we look back to the Arsenal sides of the past and they haven't had a commanding goalkeeper. You have to probably go back to David Seaman, maybe. But Petr Cech is that. You know, what did he cost, £10 million? Mm. Well, if they win the championship, that is money well spent. And he has brought that solid base to that Arsenal defence. Maybe they still need a commanding central defender, but with Cech there, I think they possibly get away with it. But going forward, they're fantastic to watch. I actually tipped them to win the league last season. That's what I know. But, you know, they let me down in big style because it was the flaky old Arsenal.
Now they're making up for it, though. Look at them.
But are they going to be flaky again? I don't know. I hope not. Because, you know, as neutrals, I think all of us would like to see, you know, Arsenal triumph.
Just quickly, I'm sure I've told this story before on here, but
if it's funny, tell it again.
It's not funny. It's actually funny. It's just a little insight into Ozil. Is that one of his biggest fans is Jose Mourinho, a massive fan of Mesut Ozil. He managed him at Real Madrid. You know, didn't go in for him at Chelsea, I assume, because he didn't think he could stand the physical demands. But he tells a story that he used to be able to turn his back on the training pitch, and the kerfuffle of training going on, and he would know when Mesut Ozil kicked the ball by the sound.
The ping, yeah.
The sound was different when I thought, it might just be a little bit of a, you know, spin on that, but he said, listen, you can hear it. He hits it differently. And that's beautiful. Just defensively, though, maybe Wenger actually thinks that, you know, I mean, from what I saw of the game, you know, Gabriel sort of had a decent game. Mm. Maybe he thinks that that's why he didn't need to go out and buy, you know, defensive reinforcement.
Koscielny, superb yesterday. Best defender at Arsenal since Sol Campbell, I think. Steve, your story on the back of the people this morning. Come back, Pat. Arsenal want Vieira to be Wenger's successor. You talk about Vieira, who's at Manchester City at the moment, returning to effectively shadow Wenger and ultimately take charge. What's behind this?
Well, two elements to it, really. I think Arsenal obviously like the path of succession that Manchester United seem to be developing with Ryan Giggs shadowing Van Gaal for 3 years before what we assume will be his accession to the manager's job at Manchester United. And I think with Wenger, he's not going to go on forever. I know one of my colleagues, Steve Stammers, has got a story this morning saying that, you know, there may be another contract in the offing for for Wenger, who's about 66 now, I think, is he? 65, 66.
Yeah, his
so, yeah, he's not going to go on forever. Vieira is obviously an iconic figure from his Arsenal days where he used to rampage through midfield. And he's got ambition. Patrick Vieira has ambition. Currently, he's head of elite development squad at Manchester City, under 21s. He's hugely thought of by Manchester City. But, and the big but is, while Patrick sees himself as on his way to management, I'm not sure the owners at Manchester City view it the same way. And if Manuel Pellegrini was to lose his job, I'm not sure City would be so bold as to appoint Patrick Vieira.
Why not, Steve? Because he's done, as a player, he's done the lot, hasn't he? You could argue he's done things the right way by going behind the scenes,
absolutely,
working with a development team, improving players, gaining knowledge, tactical insight, all the things that you require as a modern-day manager. Why wouldn't he be ready for the City job?
Well, I think they, because obviously City are in a unique situation, having massive resources, and I think they're still on the way to where they want to be. They're not there yet, and they won't be there until they consistently win the Champions League. That's some way off, which is why someone like Pep Guardiola, who has got a history of winning that trophy with Barcelona, is in the frame. Whether he gets that job or not is irrelevant, but I think the thing with Patrick is that he maybe feels that he's not going to get his chance at City, and you know, shadowing Wenger would be a fantastic education for him, and I think there's certain influential figures at Arsenal who like that idea.
But if you were to shadow Wenger, though, I mean, listen, I think
Steve Bolger's not going to get that job, is he?
No, he's not going to get that job. But then he is what he is. I mean, he's there.
Well, Thierry, he's coaching one of the younger teams, isn't he, as well?
Yeah, but you know, I think shadowing Wenger would be great. You know, be interesting, but you know, you wouldn't have much input, would you? I mean, you wouldn't have much. There's a story. You know, he does think, listen, he is the only manager probably left in the entire league.
Well, maybe Giggs doesn't have the influence over Van Gaal.
No, gets a clip around the ear and that's about it. Yeah, yes, but with Vieira, I just think there was a story linking him as well to New York City, wasn't there?
There was. I think he was offered that position, but turned it down.
Mm. I mean, I saw him last week, actually, up at City, and I totally agree with you. He's extremely highly thought of there. They would be, you know, they would be loath to let him go. I mean, that's for sure. But I see where you're coming from. It is unlikely they're going to promote ahead of, you know, even if it is such a towering figure as Patrick Vieira, you are going to promote him straight from head of elite development to manager of the first team.
But as you said, Ash, there, you know, what he's doing at the moment behind the scenes at Manchester City is exactly the kind of creed and philosophy that Arsenal have, developing young players. And if Patrick is doing that now at Manchester City, you know, Arsenal would like him to do that, I'm certain, at Arsenal.
If you go there to the campus, the Etihad campus, and see Vieira, you know, he's probably not like your normal head of youth development. You know, he's a major figure around the whole place.
Oh, he's an impressive character,
if he's got his, he's got his big office there in the first team centre. You know, if Yaya Toure, or Kevin De Bruyne or someone wants a little bit of advice, they might see Vieira in the canteen. That's a canteen, a restaurant, isn't it? It's a canteen the old days.
Starred.
Yeah, and they might, you know, look for a little bit of advice and whatever. So it's not as though, I suppose, you're just taking someone from the elite development to your first team, in a way, because he's more than that, isn't he?
Of course he is.
I think he's better going to New York, to be honest, for a season. I think
getting hands-on with management?
Hands-on with management. Obviously, it's owned by Manchester City. They can see how he does, and we all think he'll do well. And then maybe Manchester City could go for him. But as we all know, I think the job has been promised to Pep Guardiola, hasn't it?
By the City job. Yeah.
The City job.
It is that way.
So, you know, there's no room for him there.
In terms of Arsenal, I mean, can we see, you know, he would still have to be patient, because can we see Wenger leaving in 2017, the summer off?
I'm not convinced he wants to leave.
So, he'd have to
sack himself, wouldn't he?
Well, his contract's up in the summer of 2017.
While he's fit and healthy, I don't think Arsene Wenger will.
Assume as long as Arsenal are doing as well as they're doing at the moment.
Sure, he'd be 68 at that point, 2017, you know, very close to 70. It has been done before, we know that. I think it very much depends on...
I think you're looking at 2019 before the successor to Arsene Wenger.
4 years.
Unless Arsenal have a calamitous time of it over the next 18 months.
Well, maybe
and
if
the
they,
way they're playing, you
maybe
can't
if
see
they
that.
Didn't win the title this season, you know, having been in a strong position and never having a better chance to win it, Chelsea's demise, Liverpool's demise, United still in transition, There's never been a better time for Arsenal to win this title. No.
He looked a different man yesterday when I saw him after the game in the press conference. I have to say, three wins. It's amazing what three wins in a week can do, particularly when you've just beaten Bayern Munich. He's just beaten Everton to go top.
He's just had his 66th birthday. He's young looking at the moment, isn't he? The stress seems to have gone. He's enjoying
this week, though.
What a fantastic week. Yeah, fantastic week.
He's the same as any other manager in a way. Is that you look better when results are better?
Yeah. When he can get his zip done on his coat. You know,
straight on. I watched him straight on yesterday.
It's great.
The thing is, it is the results, because when you actually look at it, you know, they still face an almighty challenge to qualify for the knockout stages of the Champions League. It's not as if they've pulled miles away at the top of the Premier League either. So it's not.
It's just beaten Bayern Munich. That's not bad.
Yes, which is fine, which is good, but you know, what a difference it makes if you can just put together a few results. But I mean, on the general point, listen, as long as I think Arsenal don't implode over these next 12 months, then he'll stay beyond 2017.
But also looking at a broader picture, you know, wouldn't it be good to see Manchester United managed by Ryan Giggs, Arsenal managed by Patrick Vieira? Isn't that the kind of, you know, progression we're looking for?
Do you feel
it
has to be that Arsenal have to be managed by players or people who've been associated with the club in the past? So you're talking Giggs at United eventually. Vieira, I just mentioned Henry. Does it have to be someone who's ingrained in the culture of the club?
It doesn't have to be, Ash, but if you're looking to make that kind of appointment with somebody who knows how a club ticks, how it works, there are no better people than Ryan Giggs at United and Patrick Vieira, who you know, was at the heartbeat of probably their most successful spell ever.
So the Arsenal fans, tomorrow the job becomes available, Thierry Henry or Patrick Vieira or Guardiola or Simeone.
Well, of course, that is the mental block you've got to get past. And you couldn't blame Arsenal for going for Guardiola or Ancelotti or whoever's available.
But there's no logic, there's no exact logic. The sentiment involved, you know, huge amounts of sentiment involved in getting an old boy to do it. But an old boy who has not got any experience of management, there's not a great deal of logic in saying that Ryan Giggs is an automatic successor to Louis van Gaal, is
it? We don't know until we try it.
The vibes you get is Giggs is management material. The vibes you get from Manchester City's hierarchy, who think the absolute world of Patrick Vieira, is that, in the future he could do that job. But we don't know. And nobody knows, do they, until... I mean, do we know that Jurgen Klopp is going to be successful at Liverpool?
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know that.
No, but we will answer that question in part four of today's program. They're playing Southampton today and he needs a win, doesn't he? Because he's not won yet after two draws.
Absolutely.
Just a final point on Giggs and Manchester United. Steve's brought it up.
Yeah.
That idea of succession, do you think that will happen?
I'm not certain, to be honest. I'd like it to happen, but I fear that Manchester United might not have the bottle to do that. They might go for an established manager.
I think that's the easy thing to do rather than have the bottle to do it.
Do you?
Yeah, I think it's the easy thing for them to say, you know, Giggs van Gaal said it, no, Fergie's backed him.
I know
what you mean in the sense that then go
it
for...
It wouldn't be an unpopular decision. The fans would go for it, wouldn't they? I'm certain.
Absolutely.
Until results start going wrong.
I mean, you know, the decision is the Glazers, isn't it? Mm. And would they do it? I don't know.
It's a while off anyway, that's for sure. Just a final point on that Arsenal victory against Everton yesterday. Classy touch by Arsenal for their players to wear black armbands. Respect for Howard Kendall, the former Everton manager who passed away last weekend. OK, next up, we are going to talk Tim Sherwood. Stories in the papers this morning that he took charge of his last game against Aston Villa yesterday. It was a defeat against Swansea. More on him next. Welcome back with me this morning, Steve Bates, Andy Dunn and John Richardson. OK, let's just remind you what's in the Sunday papers this morning. It's not good for Chelsea fans. Jose Mourinho, the Mourinho meltdown at Upton Park yesterday. Matic sent off, Silvio Lauro sent off, his assistant and Mourinho watching the game from the stands in the second half. Mourinho is on the brink, according to Rob Draper in the Mail on Sunday. Results have certainly got to improve. The Sun, more of the shame. The FA will come down hard on events yesterday at Upton Park. The Sunday Mirror, Wenger for life, going to get a new two-year contract, according to Steve Stammers this morning. His replacement has already been lined up. That's Patrick Vieira. That's Steve's story in The People this morning. But what about the here and now, the present? Top Guns, Giroud scores the first goal yesterday for Arsenal, that 2-1 victory over Everton at Upton Park. Super Mandy, does that work? I'm not convinced that it does. That's the Sun's headline for Andy Carroll. Came off the bench yesterday to score the winner. This one does, though. Vardy grabs a pizza history, scores yesterday for Leicester. Yet again, that's the seventh successive game in the Premier League. He celebrated with some pizza, but let's talk Tim Sherwood now, because it's taxi for Tim, according to the Daily Star this morning. Under pressure, of course, to get results, loses again yesterday, home to Swansea. Does he have any more time?
It's a ridiculous situation, because we're talking about player recruitment, weren't we, earlier in the programme. And you look at what happened in the summer. I mean, Aston Villa lost some influential players, Christian Benteke, Fabian Delph, Tom Cleverley, Ron Vlaar, and basically replaced them with a pile of old rubbish. You know, they spent heavily. The left-back's not too bad, but the rest of them, you wouldn't give them house room, some of them. Now, who bought those players? I don't think it was Tim Sherwood. I think it was other people at Aston Villa. So who's going to carry the can? Tim Sherwood, because he's the manager. He's the man in the front line. But you can trace this right back to Martin O'Neill. You know, Martin O'Neill had Villa going for Europe. Randy Lerner decides to pull the plug, says, no, we're not going to spend any more money trying to get into the top four. You know, we're going to cut back. Manager Martin O'Neill goes, other managers come and go. We now got Tim Sherwood. It's a hopeless situation. Whoever's there hasn't really got a chance. You know, they're going to be firefighting all the time. They're going to be fighting against relegation. And it's, you're only as good as the players that have been brought in. Now, to my mind, he hasn't brought those players in. So Tim Sherwood probably this week will be sacked. And some more unfortunate person comes in. He inherits these players. Next summer, same sort of thing. Players go out, players come in. It's down to your recruitment. And the recruitment at Aston Villa hasn't been good enough.
I would suggest that Micah Richards, Julian Lescott, Rudy Gestede were probably Tim Sherwood signings. I would suggest. You know, I can't see that they were the results of... I know the signings you're referring to. The other signings, maybe the ones that were brought in from abroad. Amivi, who you're referring to as a left-back. Well, he's a good player, but Tim Sherwood didn't even play Kieran Richardson instead of him yesterday. That's where Tim Sherwood has to carry the can. I agree on the broad point that you made.
You can't keep sacking managers after 10 games.
Well, no, you can't. Well, you can, actually. But
it does happen, you know.
But I agree with the broad point that Aston Villa have been in this mess for, you know, the best part of 6 years. You know, with their fifth manager now in that spell. They've been in a hole, as Tim Sherwood said yesterday, and they've been in a hole for that long. And I accept that other factors are to blame. The owner has to take responsibility. The relatively new chief exec, the head of recruitment, Henrik Amstad, and the analysis guy, Paddy Riley, is at Liverpool. Yes, they all have a responsibility, but you can only alter one thing really now. You can't change that right now in the here and now. And I was there yesterday, and that was a team that really didn't have much of a clue what it was meant to be doing and hasn't looked that way for some time. Tim Sherwood has to take responsibility for that. He has to take responsibility for putting a team out there who look as though they can't decipher the tactics they're supposed to be using, who look as though they're not playing to any particular system. I have every sympathy for the fact that he's been this recruitment system. Well, yeah, they provided the club with players like Amivi, like Traore, like Veretout, players who they see as, you know, young, you know, 22, 23-year-old players, £7 million players with potential. That's there. My argument with that is, oh, that's all well and good, but you've got to buy for the manager. You've got to buy for what he wants, for what he is best at dealing with. And he feels he's better dealing with at the current time with the likes of Richards, with the likes of Lescott, with the likes of Gestede, like, you know, the type of striker that Tim Sherwood would like. So I have sympathy with him on that point. But, you know, he's still responsible for where that team is playing at the moment. You know, the team out there yesterday, there wasn't many of those type of players they're referring to playing. They're not getting in the team.
Why push the button now, though? I mean, why not give him more games? I know we're in this world where you've got
a £5 billion TV deal.
Exactly.
Villa have to stay in the Premier League. I mean, Villa are being embarrassed at the moment by teams like Stoke, Leicester, teams that are nowhere near as big as them.
West Brom.
They're being West Ham. Well, yeah. West Ham are big, but Leicester, Stoke have really no right to be punching above Aston Villa, who, back in the day, I know we can't keep harping on that, but Villa are still a big club.
They've won the European
but, you
Cup.
Know, it, does a big club Massive. Sell Christian Benteke and Fabian Delph in one summer? Does a big club do that? And then still expect the next manager brought in to perform? I'm not sure they do. Right. So I do have some sympathy with Tim Sherwood, but not in another way, because Clearly, everybody could see at the end of last season the scenario there. They had to improve big time. You know, they showed a flash beating Liverpool in the FA Cup. Mm. Things looked good for a while, and then they're in a bigger mess now than they were towards the end of last season. And sadly for Tim, well, when clubs are in situations like that, manager carries the can.
Just in terms of recruitment, John, have we moved into a different era in the Premier League where players are now recruited for the manager to coach them?
We have, in many clubs, with this money ball, you know, idiom, where players of under 25 are brought in from usually abroad and they've got a high resale on them. But you've got to have experience. But surely, if you're the manager of a Premier League club, you've got to have your players there. You don't sink or swim with other people's players. And this is happening. It's happening at Liverpool. It's happening at Tottenham. You know, the managers aren't allowed to manage anymore. And I hate this because it's all done on stats now. It's not done by, you know, the old scout would go out and say, oh, he's a good player. It's done on how fast they can run. I mean,
you're not going to be a fan of this, are you?
He's always the old-fashioned Ricky, hasn't he? What did we call him once? The Rickosaurus, wasn't he?
I mean, if you want a fast player, you know, sign Usain Bolt. I mean, it's ridiculous. And this is, this is what is happening at the moment, and it's not good for
football. But, John, you can't really, in this day and age, you can't really sort of suggest that the recruitment of players, the purchase of players, the scouting of players should just be down to the manager
The manager should have the final say.
You know, the horizons have been broadened dramatically.
The manager should have the final say. We go to matches all over the country. I saw Jamie Vardy playing for Fleetwood Town. You could tell he was a good player then.
Here we go. Who else have you got among your discoveries? So you're claiming Jamie Vardy.
Well,
10 goals in the Premier League.
Donnie and I go to Crewe. Yeah. I mean, at the moment, there's nobody coming through. But
we spotted you.
We go to Crewe. You know, there was nobody coming.
So Dean Ashton, Robbie Savage, Jeff Thomas.
We've been loads of
them. Danny Murphy.
All.
But I just think it is unrealistic to think that big clubs aren't going to have these recruitment departments because clearly there's a whole. As I said before, the rise of Brown, you know, you've got access now to see all players.
But they're useless, most of them. Some of these players are absolute useless.
Yeah, but when you get it right, and it was you earlier in the show, it was turning around saying what great recruitment West Ham had done with Payet, for example.
Yeah, that is good.
So if it works, it's good.
It's always a gamble, isn't it? Whatever player you buy, even
carry
the top
can
ones.
For this, though. That's what I'm saying. The manager carries the can.
But that's always been the case.
And the fans turned yesterday at Villa Park, 33,000. So there's a few turning their back on the club at the moment, but only 33,000. But have they turned? Are the fans in the stadium? Do they still support Sherwin or not?
I would suggest, you know, there was a bit of an indifference there. Really, I think they're of the same mind. Again, they're juggling the two things. The whole mess of Villa isn't down to Tim Sherwood. However, the mess in the season, the team, Sherwood must take a lot of blame for that. So I think they're sort of caught between those two things. Hence why the booing was a little bit half-hearted, a bit like a lot of Villa's play, actually. And they as soon as Andrew Ayew scored the winner, 6 minutes from time, there was a mass departure. Not a massive amount of dissent at the end, and Sherwood just basically breezed off. I think both the crowd, the supporters, and more importantly, I think Tim Sherwood, from his demeanour leaving the field, from his demeanour in the press conference, from the tone of his voice, I think they probably all know that this is an experiment an adventure that has lasted, I kind of use that word advisedly, adventure, has lasted 21 Premier League games. 24 Premier League games, I think. And it's basically coming to an end, you know, sooner rather than later.
A couple of weeks ago, my colleague Neil Moxley did a story saying that he had a couple more games, two or three more games to do it. They've lost both of the two games have played since then. I think there's some betting going on this morning that might suggest that Tim's kind of on dodgy ground.
It doesn't look good for it.
You know, there are rumours David Moyes is sort of waiting in the wings. Now, you have to say, would David Moyes do any better with that group of players?
The point is, if you bought those type of players, if you have gone in for those type of players, and of course, listen, they haven't just gone in for these young, foreign players. They haven't just gone in for them. They have bought, brought in Richards and Lescott, you know, people who have got experience. It's not just those, but I agree, that's the general tenor of the policy. So then, if you're not thinking that Sherwood is the man who can give them the chance, and he's not given many of them even a chance, and as I say, you know, that really...
How many more games would you give Tim Sherwood?
No, in terms of he's not given younger players.
No, but how many games would you give Tim Shearer if you're not going to sack him?
Well, if you're not going to sack him, well, I mean, I guess it depends if you lose your next game. I think Spurs away next in the Premier League. They've got Southampton in the
Monday night game,
Capital One Cup.
But then if
you think David Moyes is a man who will come in and will get the best out of the players that you believe are going to be good enough to start in the first team, these younger players, then bring him in. But, I mean, you know, you're then bringing in someone...
The window's not open for another couple of months, so... You know, by that time, if this trend continues,
Tim Sherwood said
in real
the telling
trouble.
Thing yesterday. Tim Sherwood, for the first time, said there was a lack of quality there amongst the squad. So, in other words, that is an indirect swipe at those who have bought those players, because he's saying they're not good enough, these younger players, at the moment to play in my first
team. And
they're
faceless. Yeah, we certainly know he's unaccountable.
Yeah, we know he's certainly in a bit of trouble. That's one Midlands club who's in a bit of trouble at the foot of the Premier League. One East Midlands club doing well is Leicester City. They won again yesterday, this time against Crystal Palace. But I want to just focus on your discovery, Jamie Vardy, when you first saw him. He's got seven in a row now, 10 in the Premier League.
I saw him playing for Fleetwood against Blackpool in the FA Cup and Fleetwood non-league. And he looked decent then. And it's a fantastic story. It's great for football. You know, we've gone on about Jose Mourinho earlier and, you know, the doom and gloom. This is the glory. He's a good lad as well. Batesy and I spoke to him a few weeks ago at the England get-together. It's just fantastic that he's come from non-league. You know, he would work, I know, get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, full-time job, then go training two nights a week. You know, he's gone up from Sheffield through to Halifax, through to Fleetwood. And he admitted that he felt out of it at first at Leicester. He didn't think he was going to make it. But fair to Nigel Pearson, stuck by him. And he's been rewarded. It's a fantastic story. And also, he's a very good player. He's an international player. A lot of people look down on Jamie Vardy from the non-league. He's not an international player. He is an international player. And I tell you what, on the shoulder of a defender, nobody's better. Yeah. Right through the middle.
Walcott?
Sorry?
Walcott?
Better finisher at the moment.
He's right though. I'm glad John said that, because there will come a time, and I think that time is probably now, where Jamie Vardy, the quality Premier League international striker, becomes the story and not the backstory of how he used to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and do a job.
I guess the worry for Leicester is how long they can hold on to him, because as long as this keeps going on, you know, we all know that players with pace and eye for a goal are the biggest commodity going. And, you know, it'd be a shame, really, for Leicester if perhaps somebody came in January with a big bid that Leicester might not turn down.
Yeah, OK. Well, a great goal-scoring run for Jamie Vardy at the moment. I'll ask the boys during the break, no cheating at home, who are the other seven players to score in seven successive Premier League games? We've got one. We'll tell you the other six after the break now. We've given you one. Alan Shearer, there you go. OK, next up, it's the Weird Tyne Derby. Steve McLaren says it's just another ordinary game. Of course it is. Decent game coming up on Sky at noon. It's Sunderland against Newcastle at the Stadium of Light. Sunderland got a brilliant record against Newcastle. They seem to have a new manager for every game. They won their last five. And they get off to winning starts, don't they? You think of Di Canio's knee-sliding celebration.
Yeah, there was three managers.
Gus Poyet's.
Yeah, and Dick Advocaat.
That was the Defoe goal last season, wasn't it?
And now it's Sam's second game. OK. Because it's the second game that does it.
So he lost against West Brom last week. Is he going to do it today? What's he got to bring to this Sunderland? What is he going to bring to this Sunderland team?
It's Fireman Sam, isn't it, I'm afraid. He doesn't like that term, but it is. He's come to fight relegation. And fantastic appointment for Sunderland. Couldn't have made a better appointment. You know, a lot of us around here, we're talking about West Ham and what Slaven Bilic has done. But Sam did a good job there as well. Let's not forget that. And I'm sure certainly he'll do a good job at Sunderland. But Newcastle, I don't know where that victory came on Sunday, but it's a fantastic victory against Norwich. You couldn't see that, you know. Having been trounced 6-1 at Manchester City the game before, that they came to life there. I mean, Newcastle, as we've said before here, they've got some good players, but whether they have the bottle for the big occasion, whether they have the bottle to come from behind, which Leicester City have in spades, don't they? You know, Leicester go two down, no problem. Newcastle go one down and that's it, the white flag comes up.
Is it just another game that Steve McLaren's been talking about? Sam Allardyce dismissed it, but that's what Steve said.
Well, I've spent the last week in the North East. And to say it's another game, well, it's a ridiculous statement, because it's more than that. It can make or break you. You know, if Newcastle can win at the stadium like today, Steve McClaren is suddenly a hero. It's as simple as that. That's the football world we live in.
Steve, Sunderland are 12 without a win in the Premier League. Of course, that goes back to the end of last season as well. Just a theory, if Sam manages to keep this team up,
yeah,
we think it's against the odds, don't we, judging by their league position at the moment. Would he be in the, his stock would never have been higher. Would he be in the running for the job that he's always wanted, the one that he craves, the England job?
No. I spoke to him, went out with him a few weeks ago, and he said to be in the England frame, he would have to be at the other end of the table.
So even if he keeps Sunderland up this season?
Yeah, no, I don't...
Winless so far.
Listen, let's be realistic.
Bottom of the table, three points.
Listen, let's be realistic. That would probably rank as one of his greatest achievements.
His stock will never have been higher if he keeps that team in the
division. The dynamic's different, isn't it? Whether it's, you know, good enough to get him an England interview again, I'm not so sure. But listen, if he did keep them up, it will be a miracle. Their defence is appalling. They can't score goals. They've got very little going for them.
Apart from that.
They've got very little going for them. But if there's anybody that can sort of motivate them, can find a way for them to start winning some games, it will be Sam.
Just on that final point on England, because it rankles with him that he didn't get the job in 2007.
No, it does, very much so, yeah. Very
and
much
that's so. Steve McClaren was so given
Steve
the
McClaren
job.
Steve McClaren got the job. And I think Sam thought his achievements at Bolton at the time, dragging a sort of a small-town club into the UEFA League football, UEFA Cup football, in successive seasons, giving the Premier League's big teams a bloody nose on sort of every other week of the season, virtually. He thought that was deserving of maybe recognition from England. And at that point, I don't think a lot of people would have argued with him. And the way, obviously, things panned out for Steve McClaren, maybe it would have England's fortunes would have been different under Sam. Listen...
Could you have seen him as an England manager, Steve?
I think I could. I could because, listen, there's nobody more passionate about England, English football, English coaches, English managers than Sam Allardyce. He's got red, white and blue all the way through him, believe you me. He also carries some negative baggage with him. People perceive, wrongly, that he's a one-dimensional football manager. He's not. His ability to embrace sports science was kind of way ahead of a lot of other managers. And the way he did that at smaller clubs, I think, set a template for a lot of those clubs to follow that route. John said... obviously, Bilic is doing really well at West Ham, and West Ham fans will probably say, this is what we needed. But let's not forget, Sam took them out of the Championship, stabilised them, and that's what he's good at, stability, stabilising a club. And there's no other club at the moment, Villa apart, that needs stability like Sunderland.
Steve Bates, who's leaving the people this weekend to become Sam Allardyce's PR man at the stadium.
Don't forget, actually, another bit.
But he also did
have a very good start to last season with West Ham,
One more point. Look at the clubs he's left.
Yes.
Newcastle, Blackburn, Bolton.
Sorry, communications director, not PR manager.
Where are they now? He's got a track record.
Where are West Ham now?
This would be his biggest achievement, though, keeping Sunderland up. That's why today's game... I don't think you can underestimate the importance, particularly for Sunderland. I mean, it's clearly important for Newcastle as well. But for Sunderland, you know, if they don't win, 10 games without a win, to keep a team that's gone 10 games without a win in the Premier League, it's not unheard of. I think there's maybe one or two teams. I remember Derby County, I think, stayed up, having not won in their first 11. I think Blackburn might have done it as well. I know Derby did, I think, in 2000, 2001. But this Sunderland team doesn't look... If that's 13 games without a win, if you're then 10 in the Premier League, you're bottom and you haven't won, then keeping that team up would be the biggest achievement of his career. And I agree with Steve that the problem they've got is that... I do think that there may be goal scorers in the team. I do think finding that key to the defence, not to concede goals, which Sam will do, will be his priority. In today's game, now, I think they're up against it because that result from Newcastle, you know, not many may have seen 6 goals coming. But that will give them a huge boost. And they have got, recruitment's been a running theme of the show in a way. And, you know, when I looked at their recruitment, I thought, well, that's good. You know, and I remember Jose Mourinho saying that Wijnaldum could play in Chelsea's team. He mentioned a few players around the league, didn't he? Max Gradle, and I think he mentioned Wijnaldum. Yeah. And you thought that Mitrovic, you thought, good signing. You know, those two are, you know, dynamic players. I remember seeing him, it wasn't a great game, but in the draw at Old Trafford, Wijnaldum was excellent. You know, really mobile, strong player, and obviously can finish as well, as we saw last week.
You happy with Wijnaldum and Mitrovic? But the overseas players brought off some statistical analysis.
I'm happy with Mitrovic when he stays on the pitch, yeah. You know, very headstrong, but, yeah, he's a raw talent. Wijnaldum wasn't a gamble. He could have gone into any of the top four sides. Top player.
Dutch international,
captain of PSV Eindhoven. And at £15 million, a bargain, to be fair.
Big surprise for me, he went there and wasn't attracted to club doing better at the moment.
Well, he's gone to a club that attracts 52,000 people there.
Yeah. OK, we'll see what happens later today. It's Sunderland against Newcastle. Let's move on to Jurgen Klopp, because Liverpool are playing Southampton. They've got half the Southampton team in Liverpool's team these days, Andy. First impressions of Klopp. 1 week, just over a week in, I guess. He drew with Tottenham in his first game at White Hart Lane. Drew 1-0 with Ruben Kazan in the Europa League on Thursday night. Now it's his first home Premier League game. It's a week of first. He needs his first win, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. You know, and what these two games he's already had, I think most of us were at the game last week at Spurs, that sort of confirmed things. Ruben Kazan game absolutely double confirmed it. Is what we all knew, is that basically it's not going to be enough for him to impose this very high-energy, high-pressing style. Without a doubt, physically, they've responded to him incredibly well. You know, they've run themselves into the ground, but like everyone has known, there is just a lack of basically superstar quality in that team. You know, to get them to be automatic top-four contenders. They're possible top-four contenders. And the reason they're not automatic, you know, probable top-four contenders, is because they've allowed the team to become, you know, pretty much a team of you know, sort of good to average players. You know, basically, if you think Liverpool's box office name, their marquee player is probably Philip Coutinho. He's probably now assuming that Daniel Sturridge is still going to continue struggling with injury. Now Coutinho this week has been dropped from the Brazil squad. You know, so your main sort of creator and you know your star name, you know, can't get his international team. With respect, you know, and I like them an awful lot. You've got Jordan Henderson as captain, James Milner as vice captain, and it sort of reflects a lack of stardust to Liverpool. And I think both of those games have just shown exactly what everyone knew, that they will respond to Klopp's, you know, Klopp's character, Klopp's urgings, Klopp's tactics, but there just isn't enough quality there at the moment to make them be able to take that leap to, you know, the Man United, Man City's and Chelsea's, and, well, not Chelsea, but Arsenal's of this world.
Yeah, see if they do it against Southampton this afternoon. Sam Wallace, our recruitment theme continues, because Sam Wallace in his column this morning says why the rest have to have a lot to learn from Southampton. We mentioned those three players that Liverpool bought, Lallana, Lovren and Nathaniel Clyne, of course, who were Southampton players. Sam's gone into great detail about the recruitment policy at Southampton, the lengths that they go to sign the players to make sure that they are a success.
Yeah.
And they're a success in the first team is a success as well under Ronald Koeman.
And they're British, aren't they? You know, which is fantastic. Again, I'm afraid, you look at Liverpool's recruitment in the summer and it wasn't good. And it wasn't good the summer before. You know, there's even talk about Klopp going to talk to Mario Balotelli about bringing him back. That's like asking King Herod to babysit, isn't it? You know, I mean, you just don't do it. You keep him away. So I'm afraid Liverpool have suffered with poor recruitment. You know, they lost Luis Suarez, wasted the money in many respects, in my view. But Southampton, yeah, they've got the template for it, for bringing in good, young British players and looking after them.
It's a good piece that the Southampton, Sam, on the whole recruitment system. It is, you know, very thorough. Very impressive. From Southampton's point of view, I just think, you know, from a romantic point of view, you just wondered if maybe one day it could be used to propel them into that top echelon and not be, you know, a very, very, very upmarket. It's an upmarket feeder club, you know, to a certain extent, and not be that. That's unrealistic. It's, you know, it's probably a pipe dream, but it would be great if, you know, we're waiting for one or two clubs to come and join that cartel at the top. And it'd be great if they could use that type of knowledge and expertise to get there.
Yeah, you never know. They might just do it one day. OK, that's Liverpool, Southampton. You can watch that game. That's at 4:15 on Sky today. Sandwiched in between the Weir Tyne derby and that game, of course, it's the Manchester derby. Wayne Rooney celebrating his 30th birthday. Vincent Kompany wants to stop him celebrating it in style. More on him next. Well, big game this afternoon at Old Trafford. It's Manchester United against Manchester City. And Wayne Rooney, 30 yesterday. Steve, well, we expect him to be up against Vincent Kompany and perhaps Mangala or Otamendi this afternoon in City's back line. But 30 years of age, where is he in terms of his career, his status in English football?
I'll tell you where he is. He's on the brink of yet another milestone, sort of heading towards a milestone goal record with Manchester United. He's already, this season, broken the England scoring record with 50 goals. He's equalled Andy Cole's 187 goals as the second highest Premier League goal scorer. And he's hunting down his next major target, which is Sir Bobby Charlton's Manchester United goal record. And, you know, I'm absolutely certain that he'll get that as well. Amazingly, there's still he still has his critics, which kind of, when you look at the stats and you look at everything that he's done both for club and country, it's quite amazing that people still doubt him. Is he the player that he was when he burst on the scene as a young boy? Surely not. No, of course. But what player is when they reach 30? What he is, he's still very influential and integral to Manchester United. And you know, Pellegrini, we saw Pellegrini on Friday. Pellegrini doesn't often talk about opposition players, but he was kind of, you know, gushing in his praise of Rooney, the way Rooney has stayed at the top, along with stars like Lampard and Gerrard, for a sustained period, at the very, very top of the game, breaking records, you know, still being an influential player. And I think for United to perform today, they will want Wayne Rooney to perform with them if they're going to get a victory over Man City.
When he scored against Everton last week, after the game, he was asked about his drought being over in the Premier League, and he said, "Well, I don't know. Ask the press." Did you get the impression that he was miffed?
Yes, I did, and probably for the reason that Steve said, because over his overall career, he's been, you know, nothing short of sensational. The records he's been breaking, but he's hunting down the United one very slowly. But he was miffed, and I don't know why. Because, I mean, people have just pointed out that it had been almost a year since he last scored his previous Premier League away goal. You know, we didn't know who Jeremy Corbyn was when last time Wayne Rooney had scored away from home. You know, I mean, it was that long ago. So the press weren't criticising; they were just pointing out the facts. You know, and they are the facts. And the facts is his goal scoring record in the Premier League in 2015 is not particularly, you know, anything to write home about. Is he still an important player for Manchester United? Absolutely, because Louis van Gaal is probably not interested in records, certainly not interested in sentiment, and. If Wayne Rooney, he thought Wayne Rooney wasn't pulling his weight in that team and wasn't instrumental to that team's success, then he wouldn't be playing. Yeah. You know, he would not be playing. You know, Wayne Rooney is still the key figure for club and country, captain of both, and that is the biggest testament to him. In terms of, you know, him being miffed about the press pointing out that he hasn't scored, you know, away from home in the Premier League, or that his scoring record hasn't been great this year, well, tough, really. I mean, it hasn't been. And that's just been a fact. And no doubt at the start of the season, he looked a bit sluggish. But is he still key to Manchester United? Of course he is, yeah.
Sure. Lots of issues around this game. One of them is Manchester City's captain, Vincent Kompany. On the substitutes bench for the last two games, he came off in the last few seconds of that game against Sevilla in the Champions League on Wednesday night. Does he have to play this afternoon? Yeah. Joe Bernstein says he's in on the back page of the Mail on Sunday this morning.
Ridiculous situation. Around this table, who's one of the best defenders in the Premier League? I think we'd all agree, Vincent Kompany. But he's been punished, hasn't he, for playing for Belgium when he was supposedly injured. Pellegrini's trying to make his point.
Why did he travel with Belgium? If he was injured, well, why did he go?
Because Belgium said he wasn't injured. So, you know, they've got a right. It was European Championship qualifier, wasn't it? So they're right to call him up. He was assessed. They thought he was fit. So he played. Now, Pellegrini thought that Kompany should have been strong enough to say, no, you know, I'll come with you, but I'm not going to play. But Kompany wants to play for his country, wants to play for his club. So stupidly, in my opinion, Pellegrini's left him on the sidelines. But I'll tell you what, he'd be playing today.
But Kompany, do you think it's just that? Or you know, I mean, Kompany, you know, has probably been City's best central defender over a long period of time. But, you know, you wouldn't necessarily say... on, you know, last season's form was consistently excellent,
No,
I mean, you're probably going back to a season before. And also, don't forget, they have got, you know, Mangala and Otamendi, you know, serious money for those guys. You know, combined, you know, we probably guess, because we probably don't get the exact figures, £60 million for those two players. So, you know, it's not as though you're saying, well, you know, he's going to lose his place if he does lose his place to a mug. It's not. It's a competition
Vincent
there.
Company's a leader, though, doesn't he? Yes. You know, he's a leader, and you need leaders in derby games.
About the importance of this game in the week, hasn't he? Playing.
There does seem to be an underlying sort of problem.
Friction there,
with Company and Pellegrini. Not quite sure exactly what it is, but there's certainly there was a little incident at the end of the Sevilla game where the armband handover for the captaincy didn't take place.
Yeah.
Manuel Pellegrini on Friday didn't really satisfactorily explain what had happened there.
Mm. Do you feel he might just be Company just got to be careful. He can get a little bit wound up, you know, and would he be, in this game?
Well, he has been a liability in this game before.
Well, exactly.
He has been sent off in this game before.
That's what I'm feeling.
But it's only because of the way he goes into challenges.
But this on top of that, if he feels he's got a point to prove, and with the history in this game, he's got to make sure that if he does play as captain,
Is he better than Otamendi and Mangala?
I think this game's going to be all about the goalkeepers. Joe Hart for Manchester City and David De Gea for Manchester United. Joe Hart's talking with an interview with Ollie Holt this morning in the Mail on Sunday, talking about wanting and his ambition to become the best goalkeeper in the world. Out of the two of them, De Gea or Hart, who is better?
I'd have them both. I would. I mean, I voted for De Gea as Football of the Year last season. I thought it was absolutely tremendous. You know, people look at Man United's defence. It was serious, wasn't it, last season? Mm. And yet, I don't think they conceded that many. And that was down to De Gea.
Hart won the Golden Glove. He's, three times, is it?
Yeah, and Joe Hart.
Three, four times now.
Come up the right way, still ambitious. You know, he's going to go on for another...
Did you spot him in Shrewsbury? You must have, didn't you? I can't believe you.
The gay medal.
I
did see him at Shrewsbury.
Yeah, no.
This is the curry story, isn't it? This is the night you had the curry when you fell out with Mike Ashley.
Very good, Ash. Very good.
Yeah, you've been on before, haven't you?
Got back in.
I remember everything.
Well
Donny,
done.
Who would you rather have, Hart or if you were pushed?
De Gea.
Unlike this man.
De Gea at the moment. And listen, I think Joe Hart is still developing, and I think he's working on aspects of his game. Pellegrini's biggest mistake this season, one of the few, was leaving him on the bench for the game at Spurs, you know, which was ridiculous. I like Hart, but I like De Gea. I think De Gea probably has the edge, I would say, just on, or maybe distribution. You know, I think his distribution is slightly better than Joe Hart. I think Joe Hart's improved in that sense. I used to think it wasn't very good. It needed improving. He is trying to improve it. I think De Gea has the edge on that. Apart from that, very close. So for that reason, I would probably say De Gea. As using De Gea as a sort of, you know, fifth defender in a way, I would probably just have him. And of course, both in terms of shot stopping, I mean, exceptional, both of them.
Quickly, Steve, who would you go with?
Hart's the best goalkeeper in England. De Gea's the best goalkeeper in the Premier League. And his influence on the Manchester United team, particularly last season, but more or less in every game, is bigger than Hart's is on Manchester City. Yeah.
OK, here's a big game this afternoon, and it's made for big men. Who's going to win it?
A draw.
I think United will win.
Man United.
Mm. Man United. I'm with Steve. I think it's going to be a draw. OK, that's about all we've got time for today. Thanks very much to the guys. Thanks to Steve, to Andy, and to the Rickosaurus. No, we pay attention. We listen to everything he says. Lots coming your way this afternoon on Sky. Super Sunday. Sunderland against Newcastle from 11:30 at the Stadium of Light. It's followed by that game, Manchester United against Manchester City. And then to top it all off, it's Liverpool against Southampton. Straight after us, it's goals on Sunday. Arsenal, they're top of the table. And he's in there. He's a top man, Jack Wilshere. He's in there somewhere. The boys just getting ready for that. Goals on Sunday, straight after us. OK, don't forget you can listen to all of today's show again. It's on the podcast. It's also on demand. We're back at the normal time of 9 a.m. next week. See you then. Bye-bye.
Enjoy Sky Sports Live. On all screens, on the go, and the best bits on demand.